And we're holding on the last line of Lamed Vav Amud Beis. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a braisa, ein oifen pas over b'yom tov over Pesach. You're not allowed to bake thick bread on Yom Tov or on Pesach specifically. Divrei Beis Shammai. So says Beis Shammai. We're going to see what the, now on the face of it, we're talking about thick bread as it means exactly that. In other words, thick matzah, and the problem is it might become chametz. We'll see later on in the Gemara another possibility. Or Beis Hillel Matirin, Beis Hillel says it's mutter. Okay, the kama Passover. So what is the definition of thick bread? How thick does it have to be considered thick? Or rather, how thick can it be? And Beis Hillel will allow it, because the Pashtos, even Beis Hillel, has to agree that beyond a certain point, it may become chametz, the inside of it, even while the outside is baking. But Rav Huna tefach. So Rav Huna says the maximum would be a tefach, according to Beis Hillel. Shekein matzino, b'lechem aponim tefach. Because we find by the lechem aponim, which had to be matzah, most menachas had to be matzah, and the lechem aponim was in that category, and the maximum thickness of the lechem aponim anywhere was a tefach. The exact shape of the lechem aponim, there's a couple of different opinions. There's two opinions in Menachos, whether it was shaped like an open box or like a boat. But in any case, it had various surfaces, and it had the pieces of dough in the corners and things like that. And altogether, the maximum thickness in any one place was a tefach. And we see they were still able to do it, and it was not chametz. So you see that up to a tefach, Rav Huna says is allowed. But maskiflo Rabbi Yosef, what kind of a comparison is that? Im omru bezrizin, sure, we can say that a tefach works when you have the zrizim, the koyanim, who are making the lacham upon him, specifically not only in general the koyanim, but we know there was the famous family of Beis Garmu, whose job was to make the lacham upon him, and they were experts at it, so they would know how to make it a tefach thick without it becoming chametz. Yomru b'she'en and zrizin, would we say the same thing applies to regular people who are not so zoriz? Im omru b'pas amela, the chachamim said and allowed that it would be a tefach thick if the dough was well beaten. Rashi brings also from Menachos that every Korban Mincha they had to rub and bang and hit the dough many, many times. They would rub and then punch the dough, and then they would rub once and then punch twice and then rub twice and punch three times and do 100 cycles of that. So the dough is very, very well made. And by the way, there's a rule in Shulchan Aruch that we're going to learn on, I think, in the next parak, that as long as the dough is being worked with, it doesn't become chametz. So there the dough is being worked over very well. Therefore, it's less likely to become chametz, even though it's a tefach thick. Yomru b'pascha eina amela. How do you compare that to regular matzah, which is not as well worked over? Im amru be'etzim yevashin, the Chachamim said, sure, we say that you can make the lechem aponim a tefach thick when you're using very dry wood. We know that Davka, they would finish harvesting the wood, they would finish cutting wood for the Beis Hamikdash by Tu B'Av, by the 15th of Av, because after that the sun, the sun's intensity weakens, and therefore there's more likely that the wood will be a little bit moist, and therefore they would make sure they had really, really dry wood only, so it doesn't have worms in it. How do you compare that? A regular matzah bakery, where not necessarily is the wood they use quite so dry. Im omru b'tanu cham, there we're talking about a very, very hot oven, because it actually points out, every day they're baking menachos in it. So it's very, very hot. Yomru b'tanu tzonin. How do you compare it to a regular oven, which might be much cooler? They fire it up once every couple of days, let's say. Doesn't necessarily get as hot. So a tefach thick matzah might well become chametz even as it's baking. Im omru b'tanu shel matzis, and one more, if the chachamim said that you can make the lechem aponim a tefach thick when it's made out of the oven is made out of metal. The oven in the Beis Mikdash was a kli shoris. That was when they baked the lechem aponim or whatever other mincha in there. That's what made it kodesh, and therefore it had to be made out of metal, because you can't make kli shoris out of earthenware. How do you say the same thing with a regular earthenware oven? So for all those reasons, Rabbi Yosef argues, it's not a valid comparison to say just because the lechem aponim was a tefach thick, therefore regular matzah could be a tefach thick. With all those considerations, it's a whole different thing. So Taka, what was Rav Huna thinking? So a couple of Achronim talk about possibilities. Maybe Rav Huna figured, sure, but because of the severity of the Isser Chametz, maybe even regular people will be zoriz enough to make sure that it doesn't become Chametz, even though they're making it under less favorable conditions than in the Bais Mikdash. Or maybe the other way around. Maybe at least during Shabbos, Chol HaMoed, Pesach, the Chachamim in the Bais Mikdash should have said that the Lechem Aponim for that week should be made thinner. After all, it doesn't actually explicitly say in the Torah any place the size of Lechem Aponim. It's Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai, or maybe even it's Rabbanon, so maybe they could have modified that. The fact that we see that they don't. Anyway, the point is that Rav Huna thought to compare it to the Lechem Aponim, and Rav Yosef says that's not a valid comparison. So, what is the deal then with this passage?
Question.
Yeah.
How can a Lechem only be a Tefach thick?
Why not?
By definition, a Lechem only a Tefach thick?
Why ever not? What does Lechem only have anything to do with the thickness of it?
Onim don't have much flour. By definition, it cannot be a tefach thick.
Well, does that mean that you can only have little cracker sized matzahs? I mean, come on. When we say lechem oni, we said yesterday it can even be like the matzahs of Shloima Amalek, right? I mean, we're not concerned
about
really large matzah. We talked about yesterday an ashisha, which is a sixth of an eifah. That's too large to be considered lechem oni. But that it's a tefach thick in and of itself. That doesn't make it not poor man's bread. Anyway, that's all right. Think of a regular loaf of bread that you buy in a store nowadays. I mean, that's more than a tefach thick, right?
No, but that's not a matzah. The bread rises, so that's different.
That's because you're used to thin matzah, so obviously you find the idea of tefach thick matzah to be odd. But it's not that odd. Okay. Anyway, let's go on. So what's the actual answer? If we're saying that it can't mean that Bais Hillel is allowing a tefach thick because only in the Bais Mikdash could you manage that and not make it chametz, but outside that, not necessarily. So I asked my Rebbe b'yichud, meaning one-on-one, I asked him personally, Umanu Rav, who is Rabbi Yirmiyahu Ba'av's Rebbe is Rav, Ikadamri, another version is Amar Rabbi Yirmiyahu Ba'av, She'ilus is Rebbe b'yichud, another version is Rabbi Yirmiyahu Ba'av reports in the name of Rav that Rav says She'ilus is Rebbe b'yichud. I asked my Rebbe personally, one-on-one, Umanu Rabbeinu HaKadosh, namely that was Rabbeinu HaKadosh, and by the way, this is what we're saying, b'yichud, and we're saying this one-on-one, is one of the sources where we have the word yichidus, means when you have a private audience one-on-one with the Rebbe, it's called Yechidus. One idea, there's a letter from the Friedrich Rebbe, part of it is brought on Hayyidim Yom, that there are three meanings of the word, Yechidus, and one of them means in private, and that's, we get it from this Gemara and from other places similar to that. Anyway, so Rabbi Yirmiyahu Ba'aba, or Rav, is saying, I asked my Rebbe personally, what does this braisa mean? And we say, he answered, my pass over. What does the word pass over mean in the braisa? It doesn't mean thick. Doesn't mean thick matzah like we were talking about. It means pas meruba. It means a lot of bread. It means a lot of matzah. In other words, that the Shammai is not allowing you to make a lot of to bake or to knead a lot of matzah together on Yom Tov or on Pesach. And the Hillel is allowing it. By my korele pas over. So why are we calling it pas over, which means thick? Mishum de nefisha belisha. The reason is because you have a lot of dough being kneaded together. So when you're kneading the dough, then you have a very thick thing of dough. But afterwards you make a bunch of matzahs out of it. But while you're kneading it, you have a large amount of dough. So it's called ova. The yibor yisema, or you could just say ba'asrei the high tana in the place where this tana lived. La pas meruba pas ova korale. Maybe where this tana lived, they use the word pas ova, which literally means thick bread, to mean a lot of bread. So in other words, so nothing to do with the actual thickness of the matzah. You're right. The thickness would have to be less than a tefach. So Malchokos b'Shamay b'Hillel has nothing to do per se with the matter of of chometz, because after all, the fact that you're kneading or baking a large amount together on the face of it doesn't really have to do with the halachas of Pesach. So that's the question. My timer, so what's the reason why the Shammai is not allowing you to bake a lot together? Is it because he's doing an unnecessary tircha? He's making more bread than he needs to for Yom Tov, and therefore he's doing tircha for other days. Well, my area of a Pesach, then why is the Braisa specifying on Pesach? I feel a bit Yom Tov Nami. You should say the same thing applies in general on Yom Tov, on any Yom Tov. The answer is, the Gemara says, Eino Chanami. You're right. The high Tana, the Yom Tov, Shal Pesach Koi. It so happened when the Tana formulated this Braisa, it was on Pesach, so therefore he talked about the Pesach. But in fact, yes, the din that he's talking about would apply on other Yom Tovim as well. Tani Nami Hochi, we learn similarly in a Braisa, the Shama Omim Ein Oifen Pass of a Yom Tov. The Shama says you cannot bake thick bread, meaning a lot of bread, on Yom Tov, any Yom Tov, or Vesilu Matirin, whereas Vesilu says it's Mutter. Now, why does Vesilu say it's Mutter? Don't they agree you can't do Tircha on Yom Tov for after Yom Tov? Tosfos quotes over here from Gemara and Beitza that the reason is because the more bread you have baking at the same time in the oven, the better it bakes. So therefore, there is actually reason. So you are enhancing the quality of the bread that you're baking specifically for Yom Tov by adding other bread in the oven at the same time. So therefore, Basil is allowing it, whereas Beshama is not. So therefore, returning to the previous discussion, therefore, so Rav Huna had thought to say again that Passover. First, we thought to say that Passover means thick matzah, and we said that even if yes, it still means you can't make it as thick as in the Bais Mikdash. So the halacha is technically you can make it up to a tefach thick because we don't really have then a source to say that you can't. However, the poskim kind of frown on that idea because again, you still may have that it is very possible for the inside of it to become chametz, especially as we said, you're not using such dry wood, you're not using as hot an oven, and so forth, and therefore the minhag developed to make matzahs as thin as possible, which is how we do it, which is why such a thing as thick matzahs, not even a tefach thick, but even much less than that, are pretty much unknown in the Jewish world. You have just matzahs are always thin, and the reason is that way there's no inside of it really to become chametz while the outside is baking. Okay. Next, Tana Rabbanan, Yotzin B'Pas Nekiya. You can be yotze the mitzvah of matzah with clean bread, meaning with white flour, with matzahs made from pure white flour. Uva hadra, you can also be yotze with hadra, which as we said yesterday is sort of a loshen sagi nahar. It means that all the hadar has been taken, all the beauty has been taken away from it. In other words, it's like whole wheat or pumpernickel or something like that. You can be yotze with such matzah as well. You're also allowed to be yotza on Pesach with srikin hamatzuyorin, which means matzahs that have designs on them, that have pictures or things designed on them. That's according to Rashi. You have a couple of other explanations. The Reb Yitzchok Geus, who was a rishon in the times of the Rif. He was a byplugta of the Rif. He brings from the Gaonim that maybe it means ones that are made with various kinds of spices. And he says nothing doing that would be matzah ashira. Of course you can't be yotze with it. So he explains that it means ones that are made in the shape of various kinds of things. So not like Rashi is saying that they have certain designs, let's say pictures of animals or whatever drawn or stamped on them, but rather that the matzah itself is made in the shape of a bird or an animal or what have you. So the Mishnah, the Braisa rather, is saying that you can be yotze with that. Now the Chachamim did say you're not allowed to make such cake. You're not allowed to make such matzahs. Such srikin literally means cakes. So you're not allowed to make such matzahs that with designs on them on Pesach, because as the Gemara is going to go on to say, while you're making the design, you're not working on the dough, and now it's going to become chametz during that time. The whole point is you're supposed to make matzahs as fast as possible. But nevertheless, the Braisa is telling us if you were over on that, you did, then you're allowed to use those matzahs for Pesach. The fact that they have designs on them, or like Rabbi Yitzchok Geus says that they themselves are made in a certain shape, that doesn't prevent them from being considered lechamoyim. So Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Dovers a shol Baitus ben Zunin l'chachamim. So Rabbi Yehuda says, actually, this was something that Baitus ben Zunin asked the chachamim of his times. Baitus ben Zunin, we find in a number of places in Shas. He was a balabas who lived in the times of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel, that generation after the Churban. And we find in a lot of places he was close with the Chachamim. I think it mentions in particular, we see in some places he was close with the family of Rabbi Gamliel. And he asked, and we have in different places, Shilas, that he asked the Chachamim, and sometimes things that he did, which the Chachamim used as a precedent. If Baitus Ben Zunan did it, must be allowed afi halacha, because we know that he was a frum yid. Anyway, so Baitus Ben Zunan asked the Chachamim this question. Why are the Chachamim saying that you can't make srikun amtziyorin, these matzahs with designs or matzahs in the shape of in certain shapes on Pesach? Because when a woman is making them, and of course usually in Gemara we usually talk about a woman making them because women in those times were usually the ones who kneaded and baked the dough. So she takes time over it. It takes time to make the design. And meanwhile, the dough is going to become chametz. Amalahem, so Baitus Ben Zunan says, if that's the whole problem, you could make the designs using a stamp, and then you set it up right away. The word kavan, usually kavan means because, but sometimes also the word kavan means immediately. Gilyan Ashas brings you a couple of other examples where we see that the word kavan means that. So you could have a stamp. You could have a stamp like you have nowadays, like you have cookie cutters and things. So you have a stamp to be able to make the design on the matzahs, or according to the Yitzchak Geis, you have like a cookie cutter to cut out the dough into the shape that you want. So it's not going to take any time. Omru loy, so the Chachamim answered, Baitus, Yomru, then people are going to say, what are people going to say? Kol ha-srikin asurin, u-srike Baitus mutarin, all the srikin with designs on them are osur, and only Baituses are mutar. Most bakers don't have those kinds of stamps or cookie cutters. So therefore, when people see that you're eating matzos on Pesach that have designs on them, they're not going to realize that you, Baitus, have those kinds of stamps and designs. They're going to think they were just made the regular way, which is you're sitting over there and playing around with the dough to make the design, and they're not going to realize, and it's going to become chametz. So therefore, so once we make the rule, then it applies across the board. This expression, by the way, kol asrikin asurin asrikin baitus mutarin, it became an expression that the Gemara uses in some other places. We have a concept in halacha called, we say many times, loy plug, that the chachamim, once they make a gzera, they don't make, there's certain distinctions which they don't make, even though you would think that there might be a reason to make distinctions, and in some places, in that connection, the Gemara quotes this expression, like people are not going to realize, looking at a person doing it, they're not going to realize that he has a special situation or special circumstances that make it mutter for him. People are going to think across the board that it's mutter. So the same thing over here. By the way, the Rishonim point out, all of this is talking about when you're actually drawing a design onto the matzahs. Now, we have, though, of course, you have the holes that they make in the matzahs. In olden times, they would make them like using a comb and sticking it in all over the place. Nowadays, they use the rollers. That's not an issue because you're not actually doing it in order to make a design. You're doing it in order to make the matzah less likely to puff up in the oven, so that's fine. You're not doing them for the purpose of a design. Here, we're talking about you're making them in order to have a design on a matzahs. Okay. Continues the Braisa. Omer of Elazar bat Tzadik, Pam achas nichnasti acha abel abeis Rav Gamliel. One time I followed my father, Rav Tzadik, into the house of Rav Gamliel. They viewed the front of Srikin HaMetzioren with Pesach. They brought in front of him these Srikin HaMetzioren on Pesach, so they had designs on them. Amauti, so Rav Elazar bat Tzadik says, I said, Abba, loikach omer chachamim einos in Srikin HaMetzioren with Pesach. Didn't the Chacham say we're not supposed to make them? What are they bringing such ones to Rav Gamliel for? Amali, and my father said to me, Bni, my son, loyshok kol adam amru elashenach toimin. They didn't say that it applies to ones that are made by any regular person. Only the ones made by bakers, because when a person makes them privately, when a person makes bread privately at home, even if he's making a design on it, he doesn't bother that the design should look so good. It's not like he's selling it anyway. So he draws the design quickly and then puts the matzahs in the oven. So therefore, there's not much of a problem of chimutz. As opposed to when a baker makes it and he makes a design on it, then he wants it to look really nice. You think of the difference, for example, when you make a cake at home versus when you have one in the store. The ones in the store are made much more carefully. that's what I was going to say. Another Omer Rabbi, so Ikodamri, another version is the other way around. Hachikamalei, the other version is the other way around, that Reb Tzadik tells his son, just the other way around, that it doesn't apply to the ones of bakers, because the bakers know how to make it fast, and many of them have these kinds of stamps and cookie cutters and whatever, only the ones of regular people who don't have such things, and therefore they're not going to know. Lemaisa, you have a couple of Rishonim who say that maybe after all the halacha would be that you could have ones from bakers like the second Lashon, but the accepted halacha in Shulchan Aruch is that you can't have any kind of Sukkah Namatsuyarin. You can't have any kind, whether the design is made by a private person or by a baker. Like we said, you don't want to say that regular ones are mutter, or also in suike bite or some mutter, so therefore you don't have matzahs with any kind of designs on them. Again, you just the holes that they make with the rollers is not considered a design, so that's not a problem, but to make designs on them is also regardless, because you're going to take your time over it, and it may become chametz. Or even if you yourself don't take time over it, other people may not realize that, and they may end up taking time over it, and it'll become chametz. So the Gemara finishes off with that discussion. Now, when you're making srikin, when you're making matzahs, you are allowed to make them thin, like wafers. They ain't osin srikin kamin gluskois. You can't make them thick like loaves of bread. In other words, Rabbi Yossi is actually saying you would be allowed, when we say srikin, we mean matsuyarin. But in other words, Rabbi Yossi is adding a new detail that we haven't had before. If you're going to make designs on them, they at least have to be thin matzahs. Because then at least, since they're thin, there's less of a chance of them becoming chametz before or while you're baking them. But if it's thick and you're going to make designs on them, then Rabbi Yossi says nothing doing. Well, if it's thin and you bake pictures, I don't know if it'll bake faster, but we're not talking about the holes. We're talking about you're actually making pictures on it. You're actually drawing a design on it or something. But still, Rabbi Yossi is saying as long as it's thin, then that's fine. So again, you have a couple of Rishonim who accept that opinion, but the majority of Rishonim don't, and that's how it's Paskin and Shulchan Aruch. You don't make matzahs with designs on them, period. Yeah, and just eat them, yeah. When you're eating them, you can make designs of them. Okay. Fine. Tanan Rabbanan. By the way, I forgot to mention before, when we were talking about the matter of making a lot of bread, and we were saying the machlokas v'shama v'silo, actually in the next perek we are going to learn a din that there's a maximum amount of dough that you're allowed to knead on Pesach at any one time, namely a shir challah, and the reason is because more than that you can't work over the dough all at the same time because it's too big, and therefore part of it may become chametz. So when we said over here that you're allowed to do Passover, our Gemara could be arguing with that one. Or it could be that there's a difference that there we're talking about one person, how much one person can do. Here we're talking about, let's say, you have a whole bakery. You have a whole bunch of people baking together, so each one is doing less than a shir challah, but altogether you have a very large amount of bread, and Beis Shammai, therefore, is not allowing it because you're making more than you need for Yom Tov, whereas Beis Hillel is allowing it because, again, the fuller the oven is, the better it is. Okay. Tanan Rabbanan. So now we're going to get into a discussion about Hilchos Challah, and it's going to also some of the things we're going to learn are also going to be relevant to the dinim of matzah, which is the subject of the sugya over here. So Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Hasuf Gonin, sponge cake, or in general any kind of dough that's spongy, V'hadufshonin, or the ones where the dough is fried in honey, the iskeritin, or wafers, which is, Rashi describes, they're made from a batter rather than from a dough, the chalas hamasres, or chala that's baked in a pan, masres means a pan, the hamaduma, it's actually, we started Tanan Rabbanan, it's actually a Mishnah in chala, so the real girsa should be tnan, but whatever, anyway, the hamaduma, and also meduma, where you have truma that fell into cholin. And now the truma that fell into cholin and it's mixed together. So all of those things, p'turim min hachala, all of those things are potter from having chala taken from them. Now, as far as meduma, actually, the Me'iri talks about, so what's the scenario over here? I mean, if it's osur to zorim, if koyanim have to eat it anyway, then of course they don't have to take chala from it. Well, the chala is going for them themselves anyway. So we go. Maduma is a question, right? It means, in other words, you have, so it means you have truma mixed into cholin, and the din is that zorim are also to eat it. You have to sell it to kohenim. So of course it's potter from challah. Who else? The zorim is not going to be able to eat it, and the kohen. Why should he have to take challah? He himself is eating the challah. So the Meiri gives a couple of answers. One of them being that we are talking about over here where it was meduma, as in it 100 times, there was 100 times as much cholin as truma. So the truma was bottle. The din was that you had, the din is then you have to take out one saw, whatever, 1/101st from the mixture, the amount equal to the amount of truma that fell in, and give it to the kohenim, just so you're not depriving them of their truma. But even so, we're saying the dough is potter from challah, because somewhere in that challah, necessarily, the truma is still mixed in. Lamaisa, what you took out is obviously not the exact same saw of truma that fell in. It gives a couple of other answers anyway. Anyway, the point is that the Mishnah is saying over there that all these things are potter from challah. So most of them we understand easily enough what they are. We know what sufganin are. It means a spongy type of dough. So like sponge cake or other things like that. Jelly donuts maybe also, yeah. Right, and in modern, yeah, and nowadays we use sufganiyot as jelly donuts. Yeah. We know what duvshonin are. We know what iskuritin are. What is my chalas hamasres? What does that one mean? Chalas hamasres. Chalas that's fried in a pan. So Amr Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, zecholot shabalibatim. This means the kind of thing that balabatim make, where they are cholot the dough. So we learned yesterday that cholot means you take the flour, or you take the dough and you drop it in boiling water, and then if you do it with the flour, then you get very bleached flour. So Tosfos actually discussed that what we're talking about over here is that then you make a batter out of it, as opposed to. There could be a couple of possibilities. You could have where you take this cholut, you take this flour that was dropped into boiling hot water and bleached, and then you make a batter out of it versus you make a dough. Or Tosfos says another distinction: even if you make a batter out of it, there could be a difference. Eventually, do you take that and bake it in an oven, or do you fry it in a pan? So that'll affect the question. But yesterday we said that cholot can't be used for matzah, implying, in other words, it is considered bread, but it's not lachem oini. So Tosfos said that either the distinction is that previously we were talking about it was made as a thick dough, and here we're talking about it's made as a batter, so therefore it's not even considered bread lahalacha, or that in both cases it's a batter, but in that case it's baked in an oven eventually, and we're saying it's kosher as bread. You would say hamotzi on it, but you can't use it for matzah because it's not lachem oni. Whereas here we're talking about it's fried in a pan. Anyway, that's one definition of chalas hamasris, and that's cholot that's made by balabatim, so it's not made like regular bread. So that's the definition of cholot. Now, so Rish Lakish says a general definition of all of these things. He's not arguing with Rabbi Shrub and Levi. Rish Lakish is saying a general thing you should know as far as these sufganin and dufshonin and iskiritin and chalas amasweis, all four of those things is halolo maisi ilpasein. The definition of all of them is that they were made in a pan rather than baked in an oven. On Omid Beis, the Gemara is going to bring, Rashi refers to it over here, that it's only considered bread, Rish Lakish holds, it's only considered bread, lahalacha, if it's baked in an oven. These aren't baked in an oven, these are fried in a pan. Therefore, Rish Lakish says that they're not considered bread, lahalacha. That's why they're potter from challah. V'Rabbi Yechon Omid, Rabbi Yechon says, no, actually, even things that are made in a pan would be chayav in challah. The reason why these four that are mentioned in the Mishnah are potter, the sufganin and so forth, is because what you did is you made them to be baked in the sun. You're not putting them in an oven. You're not putting them in a pan. You're putting them outdoors, and they're getting baked from the heat of the sun. So therefore, that's why they'd be potter, because that's not considered a normal way of baking. But if they're being fried in a pan, Rabbi Yechanan would say that's considered bread just like any other, and you would have to take challah from it. What, people nowadays bake things in the sun? Oh, yeah. So, well, yeah, you have, for example, lactis are fried. You have many different, So, according to Rabbi Yechanan, let's say, for example, lactis or pancakes or whatever, if you have a shiur challah, you'd have to be taking challah from them, whereas according to Rish Lakish not. So we'll talk about on Omid Beis what who the halacha is like, and then what the practical implications of that are. So we'll get to that. Okay. So the Gemara says Meisvi. I have a contradiction. Braisa says Hasufganin, the sponge cake or jelly donuts or whatever, Vahadufshanin, and ones that are fried in honey, a latkes or whatever that are fried in honey, Vahisturitin and wafers, Asan beilposchayim. And if they're made in a pan, they're still chayv in challah, but chayv of turin. But if they're made to be baked in the sun, then they're potter. Tshuv to the Rav Shimon Lakish, that would be a contradiction to the Rav Shimon Lakish, who says that even if they're made in a pan, they're potter. The answer is Oma Ula, Oma Lach, Rav Shimon Lakish. Rav Shimon Lakish can answer it. The Braisa is not a stira to me, because hoch maeskinen shehu tiach ulu v'soif hidbik. Because what we're talking about, when are we saying it's chayv in challah? The first Mishnah that we quoted, which Rish Lakish understood, that all these things are made in a pan, is talking about first he heated up the pan, then he stuck the dough into the pan. So therefore, that's more similar to the way it's done with an oven. What do you do with an oven? Same idea. You fire up the oven, then you put the dough inside it to bake. As opposed to, so the Gemara asks, Aval Hidbik of Vosefer Tiach, Aval Hidbik of Vosefer Tiach Mai. So what are you telling me then, according to Rish Lakish? If he put it in the pan, and then he put the pan on this fire, then Mai, then what would you say? Hochi Nami de Turin? Would Rish Lakish agree in that case it's Potter? In that case, Ad Tani Sefer, then why is the Braise continuing Asan Bacham of Turin, that only if they're made in the sun it's Potter? According to Rish Lakish, the Braise should be making a distinction within ones that are made up in a pan by itself. When is it chayev only if he heated it up first and then put the dough in? But if he did it the other way around, it would be potter. The fact that Braisa doesn't make such a distinction seems to show that there is no such distinction, which would be like Rabbi Yechanan, but not like Rish Lakish. The answer is no. Chsuri Masra, you could say the Braise is missing a phrase. Vahochi Katani, it means to say like this. Bamed Varam Amurim, when are we talking about that? It's Chayev and Chala. Sheyutiach Lavasev Hidbik. Only if he heated up the pan first, and then he put the dough in, so then it's more like the way you do with an oven. Aval Hidbik Lavasev Hotiach. But if you put in the dough first, and then you heat it up, Nase Kamisha Asan Bachama, then it's the equivalent of making it bachama. It's not like making it in an oven, and he holds that it's considered bread only if it's made in an oven, or turd in, therefore they would be falter. So no stira according to him. I saw, by the way, as an interesting thing, one of the almost contemporary achronim, a Rav in Yerushalayim, who wrote a sefer called Me'il Shmuel, explains what's the difference. What's the difference between heating up the pan first and putting the dough in, or vice versa? And he says a very balabatish svara what the difference would be. When the pan, or the oven for that matter, is heated up first, then you have it becomes uniformly hot. So now, as soon as you put the dough on it, immediately the liquid in the dough starts boiling away immediately. Therefore, it actually gets baked properly, more like bread. As opposed to if you take dough, which after all has a certain wetness to it, and you put it in the pan or on the oven, and only then you heat it up, that wetness itself prevents that part of the oven or that part of the pan from getting fully hot. So therefore, in a certain sense, it doesn't get baked fully. It sort of gets more like fried. Therefore, there's a reason for Rish Lakish to be making that distinction. Okay. You have many times, and in recipes, I'll tell you, preheat the oven. Exactly, that's the idea behind it. Actually, it's interesting, though, the Tzemach Tzedek deals with a question in one of his Truvas. Do you have to take challah from cake? He talks specifically about lekka, honey cake. Do you have to take challah from it? Now, on the one hand, it's baked in an oven, but on the other hand, you don't bake it directly in the oven like you do bread. You put it in a pan. You put it on a baking pan. So he argues that, so he goes back and forth over there. Maybe, I mean, one thing is the pan that you bake it in usually has fairly low walls, so therefore the heat of the oven is still able to get to it uniformly, so therefore it maybe is considered more like it's baked in the oven. So he says Minhag HaOlam is not to take challah from that, and he's trying to figure out why. So maybe because often with those you have more honey than flour in it, and that would be a reason to potter it. But if you have more flour, then the implication is even though it's made in a baking pan, the fact that it's in an oven would be reason enough to be mechayev it, because the heat of the oven gets to it pretty uniformly. So lemaisa, I think that's the halacha, is if you're making any kind of, well, we'll talk about later on who the halacha is like, Rish Lakish or Rabbi Yochanan, but definitely if it's baked in an oven, you chayev. So yeah, cake, for example, you would be chayev. Now you have a different question also, if there's no water in the batter or in the dough, whether you have to take challah from it. So therefore, when you're making something like honey cake or any kind of chocolate cake or any kind of cake like that, so if you're making the amount that would be a shir challah, then what you're supposed to do, the post can say, you put a little bit of water in, and then that way you can take challah from it with a bracha. Otherwise, you take challah from it. Otherwise, if you're not going to do that, then you take challah from it without a bracha. Yeah, because the point is, as long as it's going to be baked in an oven, then we say it doesn't really matter whether it was a batter or whether it was a dough. The fact that you're baking it in an oven is reason enough. And again, like Tzemach Tzedek is saying, that would seem to apply even if you're baking it inside a pan in the oven. He points out, you know, when you get down to it, the lechem aponim, for example, is definitely considered bread. And we have Mishnayos and Menachos that describe the lechem aponim wasn't just, they didn't just stick it in the oven. They had it inside a form. They had it inside a metal pan, the shape of the lechem aponim, so it would keep its shape while it's baking. So you see, just because something is baked inside a pan like that doesn't prevent it from being considered bread lahalacha. Well, silver foil, yeah, it transmits heat, true, but right. Well, the ones they had for the lechem aponim were also metal, but yeah. Okay. Onward. Toshma. So now, again, so we're still working on the machlokas of Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish about whether if it's fried in a pan, if it's fried or baked in a pan, is that considered bread la locha? So according to Rish Lakish, only if you tiach l'vasayf hidbik, only if you first preheated the pan and then you put the dough in. And according to Rabbi Yochanan, it doesn't matter. So Toshma, yotzin b'matzahina. A braisa says you can be yotzin with matzah that is not completely baked. Hina is like we're going to have later on in the perek. We're going to talk about the Korban Pesach. It says al tochlu mimenu no, and no, we're going to say over there, it doesn't mean raw. It means half cooked, like rare. So the same thing over here. Matzahina is matzah that was only half baked. Over matzah so you be ilpos, and also you can be yotzin with matzah that was made in a pan. Now, even though it has to be lechem only, so again, what would Rish Lakish do with that? According to him, if it's made in a pan, it shouldn't be considered bread. The answer is hachanam ishir tiach levasayf hidvik. Again, you could say that we're talking about over here, you preheated the pan, and then you put the dough into it. Okay, my matzahina, what is the definition of matzahina? Amrav Yehuda Amashmo, kol shaposa ve'en chutim nimshachan hemena. If it's baked to the point where if you break it, then threads of dough won't come from one piece to the other. So then it's considered baked enough that you can use it for matzah and that it's not going to become chametz. L'maisa, we bake our matzahs more than that. But one thing Achronim talk about that is that if you're not sure if the matzah is baked that thoroughly, if you stick your finger into it and no dough comes onto your finger, then you know it's baked enough. Yeah, so you put in a toothpick, for example, similar idea, right? Now, by the way, it says in Shulchan Aruch, if you take the matzah out from the oven before that, then no good, because then, because it's already hot from the oven, it's much more likely to become chametz much faster. Heat makes chimutz able to happen much faster. So therefore, if you take it out before that, then not only is the matzah going to be also, it talks about even the spatula that you took it out from the oven will need to be kashered because it's going to have absorbed chametz. So therefore, the maaseh, we leave them in there until they're thoroughly baked. Amar Rava v'chein lach v'toida. So Rava says you should know this concept about that once it's gotten to the point where threads won't come from one part to the other when you break it, when we're saying that at that point it's kosher for matzah and it won't become chametz, the same din applies to the lach v'toida. Now the din is, if the korban toida is shechted before the loaves have been baked, then you have a problem. Then the loaves don't become kaddish, and then then you're gonna have to bring another korban, and you're gonna have to bring more bread to go with it. But if it was baked to the point that ein chutin nimshachan hemena, then already it's baked enough at the time you shechted the korban, then it's good enough. Then you can finish baking it afterwards while the blood of the korban is being sprinkled and whatever, and it will be kosher. No, in other words, let's say, for example, you put it in, let's say, for example, it takes 5 minutes in the oven to reach that point. So you put it into the oven. 5 minutes later, they shechted the korban toida. because it reached that point already, therefore it's good. If you had put it into the oven 4 minutes before they shechted the Torah, then it wouldn't be good. Then it would be that it wasn't baked enough to be considered lechem by the time the Torah was shechted. It has to be that the bread it has to be that it's considered bread at the time when the Torah is shechted. And that's when Kodesh HaLechem, that's when the Lechem gets its Kedushas at Guf, and that's when the whole Korban is kosher. And when is that? It has to be that when the Korban is shechted, it's at least reached the point that Ein Chutin Nimshachan Hemena. That if you were to break it open, that threads wouldn't come from one part to the other. That strings of dough wouldn't come from one part to the other, yeah. In fact, Rashi says, actually, the Mishnah in Menachos mentions something called Kormu Poneha, where the upper surface of the bread has formed a crust. Rashi says that's the same point as we're describing over here. When it formed a crust on top, then inside threads of dough are not going to be going from one part to the other if you break it. I have the Sfasemis questions that and says maybe they're two different shiurim. Anyway, yeah. So the Gemara says pshita. Obviously, the same thing would apply as the matzah. Hocha lechem ksiv, v'hocha lechem ksiv. In both places, it says the word lechem. So obviously, whatever applies to matzah applies to lachmei toidah. If we're saying by matzah, it's good enough once ein chutin nimshachan emena, then the same thing has to be true of lachmei toidah. The answer is not necessarily maudetema. You might have thought maybe by the lachmei toidah is different. Hoyluchtiv v'hikruv imenu echon mikol korban. Since the pasuk says that you should give the korban one of each type of bread, so you have 10 loaves of each of the 4 types of bread that come with the toidah. You have 3 types of matzah and one type of chametz, and each one you have 10 loaves made out of it, and of each one you give one of the loaves to the kohen, and you wave them together with the chaz of a shoik and then you give them to the kohen. One of each type. So you have 40 loaves, you have 10 of one type, 10 of another, 10 of a third, etc. You take one of each of the 4 types and give them to the Kohen. And we learn from the word echad means shalo yito porus, means you're not allowed to take a half a loaf, a broken loaf, and give it to the Kohen. All the loaves have to be intact. So, v'hocha command prisadamya, you would argue that if the loaf is not fully baked, and there's still threads of dough going from one part to another if you break it open, it should be considered as if it's broken, because if you pick up the bread at that point, it's going to fall apart. So therefore, you would argue that maybe it's not. Maybe by lachmei toidah, it needs to be baked more than that. Kamash malon, therefore, Rava wants to tell us it's not like that. It's considered baked enough. If you pick it up, it's going to break apart. Okay, so you pick it up carefully so it won't break apart. But you use 2 hands, let's say. Okay. Fine. So anyway, the point is there's no contradiction between the earlier part of this braisa that mentioned that matzah that was made in a pan is kosher for the mitzvah of matzah. There's no contradiction with it to Rish Lakish, because Rish Lakish again says that if the pan was preheated and then the dough was put in, then it's fine, then it's considered like an oven. Okay. Maisri, the Gemara says, I have another contradiction. A Mishnah says, there's a Mishnah in Masechta Chala, Ha-Mi'isa, which we're going to define soon what that is, B'Shamay Poter and B'Tzilul Mechayiv, B'Shamay says that it's Poter from Chala, B'Tzilul says it's Chayiv. This is one of those rare cases where B'Shamay is more Mekel than B'Tzilul. On the other hand, Chalita Beshamay says it's Chayiv, but still says it's Potter. So we have to define Ezehu Ame'isa veEzehu Chalita. What is the definition of those? Ame'isa is Kemach Shagabim Mugloshin. Me'isa is made by taking the flour and putting it into boiling hot water. Mugloshin means boiling water. Literally, the Shurdish Golash means to slide off. So one possibility is Mugloshin is called that because when water boils, it like slides out, it jumps out of the container. The Ravid has an interesting explanation of it. He says the Shurdish Golash can also mean bald, and hot water has the capability of removing hair from a person's skin or from an animal's skin or whatever if it lands on there. So therefore, boiling water is called Mugloshin, like it's something that could make a person or an animal bald. Anyway, so me'isa is when you have flour put into boiling water, and chalita is mugloshin sha'agabe kemach, and chalita would be the other way around. You take the boiling water and pour it on top of the flour. So then a braisa continues. Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yosi, Omer Mishum Aviv, Zev Zelapetur. Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi says in the name of his father that actually there's no machlokas b'shama b'shtil about it. Both of them, everybody b'shama and b'shtil agrees is potter. But Amri lo zevazelachiyuv. Others say that Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi said that both of them actually are chayev, according to both b'shama and b'shtil. And the Brisa finishes. The Chum say it doesn't really matter whether it's Me'isa or whether it's Chalita. Either way, Ason be'il plus potter. If you make them in a pan, then they're potter from Chala. But Tanu Chayiv. If you bake them in an oven, then they're Chayiv. So now we have a question on Rabbi Yochanan. But before we get to the question on Rabbi Yochanan, first we got to understand what's going on in this Mishnah and this Brisa over here. Why is there a difference, according to the Tanakhama, between Me'isa and Chalita? What's the difference? Whether you put the flour into the boiling water, or the boiling water poured over the flour. So that's the question. V'tanakama, maishna me'isa, umaishna chalita. Why would there be a difference that we're saying? One of them, Bishame says it's potter, and Basil says it's chayev, and the other one the other way around. So now Tosfos points out we are going to learn later on in the Masechta. We're going to have a sugya of a couple of blot on certain dinim of kashrus, and we're going to discuss an issue over there called ilah gavar or tatar gavar. When you have a cold food and a hot food, and one falls on the other, which one overpowers the other? The halacha is we say tatar gavar, the lower one overpowers. So if the lower one is hot, the heat rises, so therefore the top one becomes hot enough for there to be one transfers taste to the other. So if it's basar and chalav, for example, then they're both going to be asr. As opposed to if the bottom one was cold, then you have much more of a heter. Then you only need is kalifa or whatever. All you need is to peel off a layer. So over here, why don't we say the same thing? There's a difference between pouring boiling water over the flour where the flour is cold versus putting the flour into the boiling water where the water is boiling. Tosfos says though that the answer is. That after all, let's say we're talking about over here, you did exactly a shiur challah. Now, even if we're going to say law gav, whether we say law gav or tatar gav, for sure a little bit of it is going to become boiled. You could say, for example, fine. Let's say you have the hot water is being poured onto the flour. Most of the hot water is going to be cooled off because it's going to touch the cold flour. But a little bit of it is going to have the first little bit that lands on the flour is going to be enough to be choylet, to make that to boil that flour. Then you have less than a shiur challah of regular flour, and we're still saying that it would be chayiv and challah according to one mandama. So therefore, the question is: so what's the difference? Whether you do that or whether you put the whole thing into hot water. And all of it is boiled. So the answer is Amar of Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, V'chein Amar of Yehuda, V'itamer of Yeshua ben Levi. Kach machloikas bezu. As a matter of fact, the same according to the Tanakhama, the same machloikas v'shamay v'silol applies in both cases. Of Me'isa and Chalita, the Tavra, and you have a contradiction in the Mishnah. Misha Shana Zu Loi Shana Zu. The Tana that taught the first part about Me'isa is not the same Tana as the one who taught the second part about Chalita. So therefore, yeah, but really what it would be, in other words, you have one Tana would hold that Mishamai would say it's Potter both by Me'isa and by Chalita. Another Tana would hold that it's Chayev both by Me'isa and by Chalita. And then you have the different other opinions of Zevazel Ptur, Amila, Zevazel Chiyuv, that there's no Machlokas Mishamai Vesilol. Okay. So Katoni Mias. Anyway, the bottom line is we learned in the Mishnah or in the Braisa, v'chamam echad zeh v'echad zeh sha'asan v'ilpos potter. Either way, whether it's me'isa or chalita, if you made it in a pan, then it's potter. But tanu chayev only if you baked it in an oven is a chayev. Tiyuv to the Rabbi Yochanan. So now you have a contradiction on Rabbi Yochanan who said on Amud Aleph that. If you make it in a pan, then either way it's chayiv and chala, and he doesn't even make the distinction of whether you preheated the pan or not. The answer is Amar Rabbi Yochanan Tanoi. So Rabbi Yochanan can answer you. You know what? It is actually a machlokas tanoim whether things that are made in a pan are chayiv and chala. So it's a machlokas tanoim. The Tanya yochol yehi me'isa v'chaluta chayav and mechala. You would think that me'isa and chaluta, as we just said, involving boiling water and flour, are chayav and chala. Tamad lema lechem. No, therefore the pasuk says that you take chala from lechem. V'hoya v'alchochem in lechem ha'aretz. And the Braisa continues. Rabbi Yehuda oima en lechem ela ofti b'tanur. Rabbi Yehuda says it's only called lechem only if it's baked in an oven. So on the face of it, Rabbi Yehuda Hainu Tanakama, isn't Rabbi Yehuda saying the same thing as the Tanakama? Me'isa and Chalita are not baked in an oven, they're fried, and the Tanakama is saying they're potter, and Rabbi Yehuda also is saying they're potter, so where's the argument? The answer is Ela Lav Ma'isa Ilpa Sikha Benayu. So wouldn't it have to be, we would have to say, that Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim are arguing about where it's made in an oven, where it's made in a pan. Tanakama Stava Ma'isa Ilpa Chayavin, the Tanakama would say, if it's made in a pan, then it would be chayev. In other words, he's saying the reason why me'isa and chalita are potter, not because they're made in a pan, but because first they're being boiled in hot water. It's like you said yesterday about bagels, for example. So therefore, the Tanakama would say once they're boiled, then bagels, what it is they knead them, then they dip them in hot water, then they bake them. Here we're talking about even as flour, the flour was already boiled by putting with hot water. So therefore, so the Tanakama would say that later on, you go and knead it, it can't really be considered lechem. But if you have, forget about me'isa and chalita, if it's made as regular dough, and then they bake it in a pan, then it would be chayiv. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda would say, even though it's not just me'isa and chalita, even if it's made in a pan, like for example pancakes, then you'd still be potter because it's not made in an oven. So Tanakama sava ma'isa ilpas chayiv, and the Tanakama would be saying, if it was regular dough that was made in a pan, it would be chayev. Me'isa and chalita are potter, not because they're made in a pan, but because the flour was boiled before you kneaded it into dough, b'chlal. But other kinds of things that are made in a pan would be considered bread, even if hidbikal or sefer tiach, even if you put it in the pan and then you heat it up the pan. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda would be saying that no, as long as it's made in a pan, it's potter. Only if it's made in an oven would it be chayev. Or maybe okay, like Rish Lakish, you would say if the pan was preheated, which is like an oven. So the point is that if we understand the Braita that way, then it's not a contradiction on Rabbi Yehuda, because then you have an opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, then you have the Tanakama, who says, even though it's made in a pan, it's chayev. He's only pottering me'isa and chalita because even before they were made into dough, the flour was already boiled. So that's what Rabbi Yechanan is saying, that it doesn't matter whether it's made in a pan or an oven. Whereas Rish Lakish, who says that if it's in a pan, then it's potter, would be like Rabbi Yehuda. However, the Gemara says, loy, that's not necessarily the correct way of understanding the Braisa. Dekulei alma ma'isa ilpas p'turin. Maybe both the Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda agree that if it's made in a pan, it's potter, so not like Rabbi Yechanan. The machloikus would be over here, let's say after you fried it in a pan, afterwards you went and rebaked it in an oven. The Tanakama would say, the fact is, in the end, you baked it in the oven, so therefore it can be considered bread. But Rabbi Yehuda Saba, ein lechem ela afoy b'tanu mi'ikra. He says it has to have been first baked in an oven, not like this where it was first in a pan, fried in a pan, and then baked in the oven. Which would be, in that case, according to Rabbi Yehuda, then it would come out. Let's say bagels would be potter from challah. It comes out because according to him, because that's what you do. You dip them in hot water after they're kneaded, and then you bake them. So according to him, maybe that would be considered. Maybe that would be potter from challah. The kivin dem ikra lav batanu afya. In this case, you didn't first bake it in an oven. You first fried it. Then therefore, it's not considered bread anymore, even though afterwards you baked it. Lav lechem. Amar Rava, my time at Rabbi Yehuda. So what's Rabbi Yehuda's reason? Why does he say Dafke, it has to only have been baked in an oven and not first something else? Dichtiv, because you have a pasuk in the Teuchecha, in Parashas B'chukosai, V'ofu Eser Noshim Lach Lacham B'tanu Echad, and there's a klal over there that ten women will have to bake your bread in one oven, meaning Rashi explains on the pasuk there's going to be a shortage of wood. So therefore, they instead of each person firing up their own oven, they're all going to have to share one oven and bake in it. Implied, but we for the fact that it says Tanu Echad, we learn from that Lechem Ofi B'Tanu Echad Kari Lechem. Rabbi Yehuda is saying only if it's baked in one oven without anything else first, only then is it called bread. V'She'ein Ofi B'Tanu Echad Ein Kari Lechem. It's not baked in one oven. If it's baked first in a pan, then it's not considered bread. Now, who is the halacha like in this machlokas of Rabbi Yechanan and Rish Lakish? So Tosfos brings over here from Rabbeinu Hananel, since the Gemara concludes that the Braisa doesn't really work according to Rabbi Yechanan, and that the way of understanding the Braisa is they all agree if it's made in a pan exclusively, then it's potter. The Machlokas is only if it's made in an oven. That would imply the halacha is like Rish Lakish. Also, the next story we're going to have in the Gemara also seems to imply that, because the Gemara is talking about this case of hidbik mufnim beutiach mibachutz. What happens if you put it in the pan first, and then you heat up the pan, which is Rish Lakish's case. Rabbi Yochanan wouldn't hold of such a distinction. So it comes out, according to that, that halacha would be like Rish Lakish. However, then Tosfos goes on to say, not necessarily even Rabbi Yochanan would agree that it's potter in a pan when there's liquid in there. The whole machlokas we have over here, it's made in a pan without any liquid. So we're not talking frying, we're talking it's potter baked, but in a pan instead of in the oven. So it takes more time, but whatever the point is, so Tosfos gets into a bit of discussion about it. Also, Tosfos goes on to say that the whole machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish might be if it was a batter rather than a dough. If it was a dough, then we would say, even if it's fried, then it would actually be chayv and challah. Because as soon as you knead it, as soon as you make it into an actual dough, then it's already chayv and challah. So, for example, let's say if you have, garlic knots are fried. So according to what Tosfos is saying, those would be chayv and challah according to everybody, because they are made as a dough. The machlokas would be, let's say we're talking about, for example, about pancakes or things like that, which are made from a batter rather than a dough, and they're fried in a frying pan with liquid. Most of the Rishonim Paskin, like Rabbi Yochanan anyway, because the usual rule is when we have a machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan or Shlokish, the halacha is usually like Rabbi Yochanan. Anyway, so the point is, Tosfos therefore goes on to discuss various kinds of baked goods, some of which are mezonos. Tosfos uses a bunch of different French or Italian words over here. It's a little bit unclear what all of these are. Tosfos mentions a couple of things that you say. Tosfos ends up saying that again, if you have something that's made as an actual dough, even though it's fried, then it would be chayv and challah, but also it would be hamotzi. So therefore, Tosfos mentions you have things that are made from a batter. For example, there are a couple of things where Tosfos seems to be talking about, like cookies or things that are made from a batter. So those would be mezonos. On the other hand, you have ones, let's say, for example, garlic knots or another example, let's say, would be you have yeast cakes, for example, pound cakes, which are made from an actual dough, which is then baked, unlike most cakes, for example, a kukish cake would be another example of it. Is made from dough rather than batter. So those actually, it comes out, would be hamotzi. And then Tosfos goes on to say, then you have things which are made from a dough, but they don't even have the shape of bread. One example Tosfos mentions is noodles. Noodles are made from an actual dough. They're not made from a batter, but nevertheless, they have no, there's no shape of bread to them, therefore they're mezonos. So you would have to take challah from them. So you would have to take challah if you make enough of a large enough batch of dough for noodles. You would have to take challah from them, but you don't say hamotzi on them. You say mezonos because they don't have turisa dinama. They don't have the shape of bread. Okay. So the Gemara finishes off this discussion. Yosef Rabba v'Rab Yosef Achoyra d'Rab Zeira. Rabba and Rab Yosef were sitting behind Rab Zeira. The Yosef Rab Zeira came to Ula. Rab Zeira was sitting in front of Ula in the class I gave the other day on Nitelnacht about the Sidre HaYeshiva in the times of the Gemara and in the times of the Goinim. We talked over there about you had the front rows of Talmidim that are sitting in front of the Rosh Hashiva. You had the front row is called Dora Kama, the first row, the top Talmidim, the Reshe Kala, are sitting over there, and then you had the other Talmidim, the lesser ranking Talmidim, were behind them. So here you have Rab Zeira is in the front row, so he's one of the top Talmidim of Ula, and Rabba and Rab Yosef are in a row behind him because they're of a lesser caliber at that point. They're still younger Talmidim. So Amalei Rabba le Rab Zeira. So now the thing is, only the So at least at some points during the discussion, only a Talmud in the Dora Kama, only a Talmud sitting in the front row would have the right to get up and ask permission to ask a question. So if anybody else wanted to ask a question, they would have to go through him. So therefore, Amalei Rabba le Rab Zeira. So Rabba says to Rab Zeira, Boi mine me'ula, ask Ula the following question. Hidbik mifnim v'yotiach mevachutz. What would happen if you put the dough in the pan or in the oven? Rashi says we're talking about a pan. Rashi says we're still talking about a pan. Tosfos says actually here we can be talking about an oven. So you put it in the, so again, with an oven, usually you heat up the oven, then you put the dough in. Here you did it the other way around, says Tosfos. You put the dough in, and then you fired up the oven. There's another explanation also. In fact, we're saying Hotiach Mibachutz. So I think one of the Rishonim, I think the Ramban or the Ran, says that actually what we're talking about is usually an oven is fired from the inside. Here, instead, you put in the fire on the outside of the oven. So what would be the din of that? Usually the oven, you put the fire inside the oven, and then you have the dough is also inside the oven. Here the dough is on the inside, and you're making the fire on the outside. Yeah. So ask Ulla, what would be the din? Hidbik mufnim v'yotiach mibachutz. If you put the dough on the inside of the pan according to Rashi, the inside of the oven according to Tosfos, v'yotiach mibachutz, and then you fire it up from the outside, then mahu, what would be the din? Is it considered bread, and are you chayiv and challah, and do you make hamotzi on it, and so forth? Amalei, so Rab Zera answers Rabba, my amalei. Why should I ask that to him? D'iaminalei, if I ask Ola, amalei, hey new maisi opus. He's going to tell me that's exactly the maisi opus. That's exactly the case with the pan before that Rabbi Yechon and Rosh Lakish were arguing about. So there's no reason to ask a new question about it. That was the reason, by the way. Now we see from this Gemara what the reason was why they had the rows of Talmidim and why they had it arranged that way. That way, you don't just have any person gets up and asks a question that there's no place for it. The front Talmidim would be the ones to filter the questions right and to know what's a good question to ask and whatnot. Amalei Rabbi Yosef l'Rab Zera. So now Rabbi Yosef also turns to Rabbi Zera, who is a row ahead of him, and he says, "Boy, me name Ula. Okay, ask Ula a different question. Hidbik mimifnim. What if you put the dough on the inside of the pan or the oven, the avuka kenegda, and then you have a torch of light directly above it?" So now you have, let's say, according to Rashi, you have the pan sitting there on the counter, and then you hold a source of heat, a torch directly above it, in order to bake it. Now it's sort of like you have ovens nowadays, often have the heating element on top, right? So what would be the din? Is that considered bread? Amalei, and again, Rav Zeta says, my amalei, why should I ask it to him? De'iaminalei, if I ask him, amalei, he's going to answer me, roivaniya mosimkein. The fact is, most poor people do that. When they're making bread, or other things like that in a pan, they don't want they don't have very much firewood. They don't want the heat of the firewood to be wasted on heating up the pan. They want it to be baking the bread or the whatever it is that you're baking in the pan. So therefore, yeah, they're going to have a connector. They're going to have a torch right above it in order that the heat goes more into the dough than into the pan. So therefore, yes, that absolutely that would be considered bread, and therefore that would definitely be considered bread. And there's no reason to even ask. Definitely, that would be chayiv and challah, and definitely that would be considered bread as far as hamotzi and so forth. Okay. So again, that was the fact that we had this question about hidbik mufnim v'yotiach mibachutz. Again, according to Rav Yechanan, on the face of it, the question wouldn't begin, which is one reason maybe to say the halacha is like Rish Lakish. But again, Tosfos discusses that you have a difference whether it's a batter or a dough, and also whether you have this liquid in the pan that you're frying it versus you're just baking it in the pan without any liquid. And there's also what I mentioned about the Truva from the Tzemach Tzedek, where you have, when you're baking lekach or other kinds of cake in an oven, there's no liquid there in the baking pan. It is being baked directly by the heat of the oven. The pan is not really protecting it very much from the heat of the oven, especially, like you said, it's a metal pan. So therefore, there's more reason to say that it should be chayev in challah. As far as hamotzi, that's something else because it was made from a batter to begin with. So actually, the Tzemach Tzedek ends up saying that if it's made with May Peres exclusively, then it might be pasabal b'kisnin. Then fine, it might have the halacha of pasabal b'kisnin where you say mezonis on it, but if you kaveh a suda on it, then you say hamotzi on it. But that's a whole other matter. But he's mainly focusing on the question of whether it's chayiv and challah or not. So he says, if it's more dough than honey or whatever it is, you put it over there, then more flour than honey, then yes, it would be chayev in challah, even though it's being baked in a pan, because the fact is, it is in the oven.
The dough that you could put in the pan always contains moisture and water. So whether or not there is water in the pan.
Of course, the dough contains moisture, but there's still a difference whether you're putting moisture in the pan, and you're putting oil or water or what have you in the pan, and then frying the thing in it, versus you're putting it in the pan as is, and it bakes directly over the heat. That's the difference.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you're asking Ellie what commercial bakeries do. I would hope that the commercial bakeries take challah when they make. I mean, obviously this is all only if you're making a shiur challah at a time. If you're not making a shiur challah at a time, actually we're going to learn in the next perek also that we have the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, which is accepted lahalacha, that even if you bake them separately, if afterwards you put them into one big container, then that's mitzadah for them as far as challah, which is how we do in the matzah bakeries nowadays. In the matzah bakeries, they don't take challah from the dough before they bake it, because you want to bake them as fast as possible so they don't become chametz. But afterwards, they take a bunch of matzahs, put them in a box, and then they take challah from that. They take one matzah out of it and then designate it as challah, and then burn it. But so similarly, I guess, yeah, you would have in the bakeries, if let's say if they're making one cake and another cake and another cake, and eventually they're all put into one box, then yeah, they might be chayiv and challah. So how they do
don't
it,
you
I'm
have to take challah? Don't you have to take challah when it's still dough instead of matzo or
you're
bread?
You're supposed to take challah when it's still dough, but if you didn't, then you still take challah from it after it's baked. So with matzahs, l'chatchila, we do that nowadays because we don't want to take the extra time to take off a piece and designate it as challah because we want to bake the matzahs as fast as possible. So then we're soimach l'chatchila on Rabbi Eliezer's opinion that we take challah from it, that we take challah from it after it's baked. In the case of cakes, when bakeries make challah, so cakes or whatever, obviously they don't have that issue. So yes, they should take challah from it beforehand. But what I'm saying is, you could have a case where let's say they knead the dough or they make the batter for one cake at a time, so it's less than a shiur challah. But later on, you have a bunch of them are placed together in a box. At that point, a shiur challah kicks in on it, so they would have to take challah from it, even though to begin with they were each made in smaller quantities.
But according to Rabbi Eliezer, as you said, it has to be b'dieved. If you do it chatchila, it's still okay.
No. Let me explain, because I guess I'm not making myself clear. A shiur challah is somewhere between 3 and 5 pounds of flour, depending which posuk you ask. So imagine, for example, that you're making a bunch of challahs, you're making one, or a bunch of cakes or whatever, 1 pound at a time. So 1 pound is not a shiur challah, so you're not taking challah from it. But imagine, let's say, you make five 1 pound challahs. So you didn't have to take a shiur challah from each one, because individually you were kneading 1 pound of dough at a time. But now, after you bake them, you put those five challahs into one box, all of a sudden now it becomes chayiv and challah. And therefore you would have to take challah from it. So that's and the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer, so that would be the din now. Even though individually when you were making the dough, none of them were chayiv and challah, but because now you put them into one big box or bag or what have you, now they become chayiv and challah. So I'm saying we usually in the case of matzahs we do that l'chatchila. In the case of other bread, it's something to be careful about, that if you're making smaller amounts and you're thinking, okay, well I'm obviously potter from challah because I'm making well less than 3 pounds, but you don't realize that then afterwards you put them in one box and then they become chayiv and challah. We'll talk about that more. We'll talk about that more in the next perek Bez Hashem when we have the dinim about that. But I figured it's worth mentioning now in this connection. So yeah, what the bakeries do, I would hope that they know these dinim. I would hope at least the mashgiach knows these dinim and has them take challah as needed.
Implying that if you put them one by one in the oven, then you don't have to take challah?
No, that's not what I'm saying. Because again, the fact that you put them one by one in the oven, but so what? Afterwards, after you take them out of the oven, you put them in one box. At that point, a chiyuv challah kicks in, even if up until now you didn't have an individual chiyuv challah. That's the point. The fact that you put them in a basket or a box or whatever, now you have a shiur challah in that box. Now it becomes chayiv and challah for the first time. Clear?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would think that when you put them together in the oven, then it's a shiur challah. No, it's in a box.
I don't know if the oven is considered a keli for that purpose, but it could be. I don't know. Okay. That's a good point, but I don't know. All right. Stay off, everyone.